I'm reading stage five here. It says, part of the stage, there's no track to ride on, and you're just riding through, like, it looks like sandy desert for multiple kilometers.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It's wild. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the latest episode of the Matchbox Podcast powered by Ignition Coach Co. I'm your host, Adam Sabin, and this week on the show, we're talking about how to train for flat races when you really just don't have access to flat terrain, and also providing some tips for weight management and weight loss while amidst your regular training. Today's show is also brought to you by Flow Formulas. Get on top of your nutrition game now by heading over to flowformulas.com and make sure to use the discount code MATCHBOX when checking out. As always, if you like what you hear, please share this with your friends and leave us a five-star review. And if you have any questions for the show, you can drop us an email at matchboxpod@gmail.com with email title The Matchbox Podcast, or you can head over to ignitioncoachco.com and fill out the Matchbox Podcast listener question form. All right, let's get into it. All right, Caitlin, thanks for making a bright and early morning for us.
Yeah.
It's tough with the time change. You're 3 hours
behind Arizona doesn't. Yeah. Technically Pacific time now.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
it's 6:30 in the morning for you?
It's 6:30 in the morning.
Wow. Yeah. So all of our listeners
things
out there.
Do for the podcast.
Yeah. Much appreciated.
Dedication.
Okay. So this first question this week, this one comes from Joseph from Spain, but currently living in the French Alps, which sounds cool. The weather has been great this year and I'm able to do most of my trainings outside, but I always have to go uphill or downhill given the terrain that I live in, because there are no flat areas. My first mountain bike race is a six-day stage race in Morocco at the end of April, and it is a fully flat and really fast course. I'm wondering if there are any ways to improve performance on flat terrain without actually being able to train on the flats. If so, what can I do? Congrats on the amazing podcast. We need more guys like you in Europe.
Hmm. This is the opposite of the problem that most people have. I feel like most people are training mm-hmm. for a climbing race, but they only have flat terrain around them, so they have to train for climbing on flat terrain.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Hmm.
So Dylan, I mean, you come from a fairly hilly area.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, how often are you able to just go out and ride a 4-hour endurance ride on flats? Is it even possible?
It is possible. Yeah, you can do a flat rolling ride here. It's kind of hard to come by because any direction you go, there's going to be a pretty significant mountain to climb. But if you kind of stay in the valley, you can keep it flat. So I'm going to be honest. I haven't really ever thought about this question because I don't think it's ever been brought up to me. It's always the reverse. Anytime this question is brought up, it's always somebody who is training for climbing who lives in the flats. So
yeah, I agree, and that's why I thought it was an interesting one to throw in here. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure Joseph is not the only person out there. It's just that, yeah, I would say that's got to be the minority. Most people, especially with mountain biking, because most mountain bike races take place in mountains, so you're just hardly ever having to prepare for a flat mountain bike race.
This is a difficult one because I almost feel like it's easier to do it the other way around.
So let's say, what are his most likely concerns? I would say he's used to, expending more effort on the way up and then having the ability to coast down, and he's not going to have that same option. So I would say my, gut response is to say, okay, well, if it's super important to him, just get a trainer because you don't have that luxury of coasting unless you just stop or get off. So that would be probably the best way to simulate, what he's going to experience out there. But it's so common to hear the other way around. What type of workouts do you think would match the demands of flat terrain? Obviously not, if he doesn't have that available, because I say this because if somebody, is in the reverse situation, it's like, okay, well, a lot of climbing requires, perhaps different muscle groups. So supplementing with strength training is going to be super helpful, or finding a hill and doing hill repeats, that's going to be super helpful. So like, what can we tell him for?
Yeah, so that's kind of how I was going to approach it. Is like, you know, what are the differences? You know, what are the differences in demands going from a hilly terrain to the flat terrain? And I think that is the biggest one, is that you really don't get any of that reprieve on the descents. And not that if you're descending technical terrain, I mean, it's not like that's easy on your body. It's not, mm-hmm. you're not coasting down a road, but it's still a break from pedaling and expenditure, and your heart rate's likely going to, you know, come down a little bit. You're going to get some recovery versus when you're on flat terrain. Now it depends. If it's a group dynamic, then maybe you can hide in the group a little bit and, you know, get some breaks and pedaling there. But that is largely the biggest difference, is that with flat terrain, you have to be pedaling the whole time for your bike in order for your bike to be moving forward. And likely what that means too is you're kind of forced to have more consistent efforts. So, you know, you're not hammering hard up a climb and then coasting or recovering on the descents. Like, you're probably going to spend a lot more time closer to tempo. They don't say how long each of the stages are, so I'm not sure if this is a cross country stage race or if we're looking at more of like a cross country marathon, Cape Epic style stage race. But it is 6 days, so, you know, regardless, you want to, you know, you're going to have to be kind of pacing each day individually anyways. But, you know, yeah, I mean, it just means you're going to spend a lot more time at a more consistent effort.
Mm-hmm. You can try. I definitely agree. You can try to tailor the effort to what the race demands are. And I mean, that goes for any race that you're doing. It doesn't have to be flat or climbing, or, you know, you live in the flat or you live in it. You should always be, in the month leading up to the race, tailoring your training demands around what the race demands are. I think what I'm trying to wrap my head around is what we're going to do about the fact that putting out power on a climb is different than putting out power on the flats.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people who only ever do efforts on climbs do struggle with putting out power on the flats. And as much as I hate to admit it, I think Caitlin is right here about the trainer. Like, I say I hate to admit it because I hate riding on the trainer, but I almost feel like that's the only way that you're going to get that stimulus if you just don't have a flat road around you to train on.
Yeah. I just looked up.
Are you looking up the routes?
Yeah. Are you looking at the Titan Desert stage race?
Yes. Yes.
It's not flat. It's,
I know.
The first stage is 100K with 2,400 meters of climbing. That is okay. Super hilly. It might be more rolling terrain, and some of the later stages drop down to like 600 to 700 meters of climbing, but still, even, I mean, you know, it's not pancake flat. I would guess that some of those stages are really kind of more rolling.
Kind of like when people say Unbound is flat.
Right. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, the first two stages have 2,400 meters of climbing and then 1,700 meters of climbing. The last four stages are definitely a little flatter. They're all under 1,000 meters climbing. So I do see that part. But, you know, those first two stages for sure have a ton of climbing in them. And it looks really cool, actually. I kind of makes me want to do it. It looks awesome. All it takes is doing one foreign race, and now you're just like hooked on doing international racing. But anyways, yeah, I actually agree. And here's a secondary reason why I think the trainer might be a beneficial tool during this time. Coming from the French Alps, I'm guessing in April, even by April, the weather is probably not going to be super warm there. You know, maybe you're looking at 40s, 50s, 60 degrees. That's Fahrenheit here. I don't know what that translates to in Celsius. But anyways, I'm guessing that going to Morocco that time of year, even though that's not peak summer weather, it's probably going to be on the scale of in Celsius, 10 to 15 degrees warmer, and Fahrenheit, maybe 20 to 30 degrees warmer than what you're used to. So having doing some work on the trainer allows you to regulate some of the temperature that you're going to be training in as well. And you can do some things to induce some better heat acclimation. So that might be a secondary benefit of using the trainer in this case. And I would also make sure, if you're going to use a trainer, put your mountain bike on there, because riding your mountain bike on the flats is definitely a lot different than riding a road bike on the flats, and it's a lot different than riding your mountain bike on climbs. The position mm-hmm. and how you, you know, trying to, you know, get more aerodynamic is more challenging and different. And like Dylan, you know, this even just from racing Leadville, you know, like when you're climbing up Columbine, it's very different than when you're riding the flats from, you know, Pipeline out to Twin Lakes. Like, you know, the position on the bike is very different. Sure. So you want to get used to that and you want to practice that. Cause if you're just used to riding your mountain bike up steep climbs and down steep descents, it's going to be a very different position for pedaling, especially trying to get decent power output.
Definitely.
And I just want to say, even though some of the stages are seemingly flat, it talks about the nature of the terrain being pretty technical and sandy, which is, I mean, if you're riding through sand and technical terrain, it's not going to be like riding flat road. You know, if you want to stay on your bike through sand, you're going to be putting out VO2 at times. I don't know if I would recommend that, but if that's what you want to do, then that's what's going to happen.
That's a whole different skill set, honestly. If he doesn't have sand around him, it might be a little bit of a shock to the system.
I'm reading stage 5 here. It says part of the stage, there's no track to ride on, and you're just riding through, like, it looks like sandy desert for multiple kilometers.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It's wild. Yeah, so to kind of touch on, some of the energy systems that you'd want to focus on kind of in the build up to this, you know, the more specialty phase, I would think spending a fair bit of time at tempo, just because with the, you know, the nature of some of those flatter stages, you will be spending more time just riding long durations at tempo, but then also mixing in, like, I like the idea of doing like some tempo with bursts or tempo over unders where you're like spiking above tempo, because you don't want to just get your muscles and body so used to sitting at tempo that it can't recover well from those super threshold efforts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm sure you have some really quality mountain biking where you are. And I would say try and match your mountain biking experience and training to what you're going to see there. I would worry less about, I was assuming he was talking about the road riding isn't flat. And now looking at the event that you're going to be doing, I wouldn't be too worried about that. I would say, you know, continue to get your quality workouts on the roads, which 9 times out of 10, it's ideal to have a climb to do those workouts on. And then be on the mountain bike to best prepare for this. Maybe the concern is weather right now. I wonder if he can even be on the trails this time of year.
I'm not sure. Joseph does say that the weather has been good enough that they are able to train mm-hmm. outside, but they don't specify if that's on the trails or on the road or whatever.
Cool.
Mm-mm.
All right.
Okay. So next question here. So this one comes from Dave. Dave says, I'm in training leading up to some endurance gravel races this coming summer, wrapping up my base season now and transitioning into more focused race specific training. I'm not winning any races, but I would like to finish strong and maybe on a good day podium for my age group. I had a few injuries over the last year that sidelined training and I put on a lot of weight. I'm now about 30 pounds over where I would like to be. Should I prioritize weight loss over increases in power output and endurance? I fear that if I focus on losing a lot of weight during this time, I will put the other two at risk. What are your thoughts or recommendations? Thanks. I feel like this is a fairly common question and situation that athletes find themselves in. One, almost every endurance athlete at some point in their training seeks or desires to lose weight or, you know, improve body composition. Mm-hmm. That's just very common for that to happen. And then also the dilemma of, you know, when is the most appropriate time to do so? What is the best approach for that? And, you know, what are some things to avoid when doing that?
Yeah. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, when people have, you know, 5 to 10 pounds to lose, I always want to say, focus on your training, the body composition. You know, it sounds like he's getting back into riding, and your body composition will change the more you pick up volume and intensity. And if you're strength training, just have the focus be on progressing your performance. But 30 pounds is pretty significant. So I would say, you know, if this is something that's super important to you, reach out to a nutritionist, dietitian. I always forget what Savannah, what her official title is, but through Ignition, we do have,
I think she's a dietitian,
a sports dietitian on staff that could help you. I just wanted to give her a shout.
I think that you're right about the, it depends on how overweight you are, how much you should focus on it. At 5 to 10 pounds, I think that more focus should be placed on improving power output. More than 10 pounds, and I think we're kind of getting into the territory where your focus actually should be losing weight, because that will probably make a bigger difference than improving power. And that's not to say that you can't do both at the same time. It's not like you have to choose either improving power output or losing weight. You can do both at the same time. I will say, though, that if you are in a significant enough calorie deficit, your recovery will probably suffer. You might not feel amazing on the bike, but I think that at 30 pounds overweight, that should be your main focus. And the other thing that I want to say is, as far as like what's the optimal time of year to do this, I think that there's, in an ideal world, what you would do, which I think in an ideal world, people would be losing weight in the off season / base season. And then by the time they get to build, they've lost the weight that they need to lose and they can fully focus on training and not losing weight. And then there's what happens in the real world, which is that usually doesn't happen. If people have 30 pounds to lose, it's usually a steady process that extends into the build season, into the race season. It's not going to come off immediately just because you decide that you want it to in the base season. It's going to be difficult to lose 30 pounds, and it's probably going to be something that you're going to need to work on even into the build in the race season. So I think, though, at that amount of weight, it is a big enough performance improvement to still be focusing on that, even if you're in the midst of race season.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I mean, that's you're talking about a lot of watts to compensate for that. Mm-hmm. 5 to 10 pounds or 3 to 5 kilos, you might only be talking, depending on what your current fitness level is, anywhere from 15 to 30 watts, which that seems manageable. But, you know, when you're talking closer to 50 plus watts, now that's a lot to ask of yourself. It's a lot to expect out of yourself, your training, especially if you're not doing anything new or unique with your training. It's not like all of a sudden, just because you're carrying around, whether it's muscle mass or, any other mass, it's not like your body's just automatically going to say like, well, now it's time to put on another 50 watts. Like, that still takes a lot of specific training for that to happen. And it might not ever happen. So yeah, I completely agree with everything both of you guys are saying. And I think the hardest part, I think the reason people don't end up losing weight in the off season is because the training just isn't conducive for it. Most of the time, they're not pairing it with the type of workouts that they would need to induce that type of fat loss, because it's the off season and they're too focused on trying to stay, with their, calendar year periodization. Mm-hmm. And it almost makes me wonder, like, if weight loss is part of your goal for the next season, you need to have like a specific period of time where you're doing workouts in a training volume that is conducive to weight loss, and kind of disregarding where it falls within the calendar periodization. Like, it's just intended for that weight loss period. And then once you get through that, or through a majority of it, then it's like, okay, now we can set up your calendar year periodization. But it's just, most of the time, it's like, if you're trying to lose weight while you're also doing, for most people, they just can't do high volume training regardless in the off season. Mm-hmm. But if you're not doing high intensity training to pair, paired with that, you're just probably not going to see the weight losses, numbers, skyrocket.
Yeah.
Also, one thing that I was going to add here. So I work with athletes all the time that, one of their goals is weight loss. And for myself, like, I've never really personally had to put myself through that. Usually the weight kind of falls off when it needs to. And for me, that's usually like during the build phase. But it's not like a big number. It's, maybe 2 or 3 kilos max, kind of like the fluctuation throughout a season. So it's, you know, you're not talking a lot about a lot there. So I've never really had to subject myself to some of those specific weight loss mechanisms, whether it's dieting mm-hmm. or, you know, specific type of training to induce some of that. So this winter, I did kind of delve down that road personally because, you know, the motivation was initially because I had gained like 5 kilos, which was mm-hmm. more than I'd ever seen. Maybe actually like 6 kilos at some points. Mm-hmm. And it kind of like gave me like the motivation of like, hey, I should just try this and just to see, because I'll give recommendations to athletes on how we can, you know, approach the weight loss, regimen and pair it with appropriate training. And all that's come from doing my own research, but I'd never actually subjected myself to it to know, like to be able to put myself in their shoes and like understand like how challenging it can be at times. Yeah. And one of the things that I found was I tried a few different ways, but the thing that I found the best to work well with training was intermittent fasting. So I was able to approach it in two different ways. One, with intermittent fasting, you can kind of time your nutrient intake. So like, let's say you're fasting from 8 p.m. till noon the next day. If your workouts aren't until the afternoon, you can time your nutrient intake to well support your training. And it's really not a problem. The other option is if you're an early morning trainer, like let's say you train before work, while my light's like flickering, like going to give me a seizure. If you're an early morning trainer, and I did both because I wanted to experience like, okay, what are the differences if you're a morning trainer versus an afternoon or after work trainer, just to put myself in those shoes. I actually didn't find any real detriment to my workouts if I did my workouts immediately in the morning, as long as I hydrated well with appropriate amount of electrolytes. Even in a fasted state, I was still like smashing VO2 max workouts. I don't recommend it for the general public, but if it's part of your weight loss regimen is doing intermittent fasting, but you still want to get quality work in. I didn't really see, as long as the workouts didn't extend beyond an hour or so, you know, if it was just a standard VO2 max workout on the trainer, I really wasn't seeing any detriment in as far as like power numbers go. And I was still seeing improvements week after week. So it's just, I'm putting that out there as in that seemed like the intermittent fasting thing. Now, the funny thing is I didn't have enough weight to lose that intermittent fasting really didn't move the needle for as far as like my weight loss regimen goes. But I know for people that have more weight to lose, intermittent fasting is a really effective way to do that. Cause all you're doing is reducing calories and reducing the amount of time in which you're intaking those calories. So it makes it a lot easier for like caloric management. But if you don't have a ton of weight to lose, it's not as effective. And the research has shown that. And I kind of knew that going in, but I still wanted to like subject myself to it just to put myself in their shoes. So that's just kind of like personal anecdote. And it's something that I've like kind of put in my back pocket. And now I know moving forward, like with athletes, like that might be something that we utilize, especially during a time of the season where we are still trying to hit performance on the bike. You know, it's not just an arbitrary weight loss period throughout the season. It's like, hey, we're in the build season. How do we effectively manage the weight loss and body composition while still maintaining quality intensity throughout this phase?
And I would add, be patient. You know, the recommended weekly weight loss is 2 pounds. And I would argue if you are also simultaneously focused on performance, it's probably even less.
Yep.
Because it takes 3,500 calories, a 3,500 calorie deficit to lose 1 pound. So 2 pounds is 7,000 calories. That's huge when you are also trying to recover for future work and perform at a high level. So I like what Adam is saying about having this designated phase of training where you're more focused on the weight loss. And it makes sense that would be the high intensity phase because it's easier to, you know, you can look at, your Garmin, your should tell you calories burned, but you can see kilojoules and calories is pretty much one for one. And on those upper intensity workouts, you're burning a lot of calories. So, that makes sense, but yeah, just be patient with yourself. I would say a lot of people don't throw out there, you know, weigh yourself every day. Oh, I don't want to get like caught up in the numbers, but it's not about the daily number. It's about looking at the trend.
Yeah.
I heard this, you know, weight loss expert on a podcast talk about, you know, your GPS, if you have set directions to a place that's due north, you're going to make turns that are going to go east and west. And sometimes you're even going to go south for a minute to get north. But sometimes we decide we know better and want to take a shortcut as soon as we see that we're going in the wrong direction. And usually that ends up bad. So be patient. And yeah.
Yeah. And I think the important thing is, you know, I do think it's important to, one, track your weight each day and do that consistently at the same time each day. Whether that's like, for me, I always did the first thing I woke up. It was like the first thing I'd measure. That way it's consistent. You're not like, if you measure yourself in the morning and then the next day you measure yourself in the evening, you could be 3 pounds off just from the fluctuations of like what you've consumed that day. And that's not really a fair metric. You want to be comparing apples to apples when you're doing that. So, you know, pick a time, you know, 5:30, 6 a.m. first thing when you wake up every day. And then it is important during this time to track your calories. And I think something you touched on there, part of the importance of that is making sure that you're supplementing enough calories during this time. Like, if, especially if you're training through this, like, you need to make sure you're getting enough of your macros. Like, you still want to have that caloric, like, daily caloric deficit as a goal. But you need to make sure that it's not overextended. You know, if all of a sudden, if you don't track it, and all of a sudden one day you're in a 1500 or 2000 calorie deficit because you had a big training day, and you're just like, well, I'm just not going to eat because I, you know, want to take advantage of this extra training load. That's going, you might not feel it that day, but the subsequent 2-3 days you're going to feel it. And you're likely going to just bounce back and have to binge and recover anyways. So the more you can track it, the more you can control it. And just keep in mind that, like, it's all just like you're training, like, you know, FTP and like your training zones. It's just there as a guideline. It's just there to reference and track your progress. So you don't have to use it to compare to anyone else. You don't have to use it to set, you know, any kind of absorbent expectations for yourself. It's just there to help as a guideline. So I think, you know, tracking your daily weight. And then also, like you said, Caitlin, I think it's important, instead of looking at it day to day and comparing that, most dietitians or nutritionists would recommend like calculating your weekly average. So that way you're kind of taking it more of a, you're able to consolidate more data into that metric that you're comparing week to week, and you're going to get a better outlook with that. And you're going to see those trends more clearly than if you're tracking it each day. It kind of works like if you're doing a threshold effort on the bike and you're using instantaneous power versus 3 or 5 second power. Like, if you're using instantaneous power, it's really easy to feel like you're getting off track. But if you use 5 second power smoothing, you can really pretty easily hit that power target, you know, within a small tolerance. So it kind of works in that same way. Like, you don't want to just compare day to day, because it you are going to see way too much fluctuation there. It's very easy to get discouraged in that way.
You mentioned calorie tracking, so I don't want to get lost in the weeds about nutrition, but I do want to mention too, if the goal is a calorie deficit, you know, and you're trying to cut back your calories for the day, my charge to people, especially athletes, is always, your protein is an absolute number. So if you look at your percentage of macros, like your percent of protein to fat to carb, when you're looking at your overall caloric intake, instead of just reducing all of those at the same ratio.
Mm. Yeah.
As an athlete, you should be getting, as an endurance athlete, like, what is it? 1.6 to, or 1.8 even to 2.0,
yeah.
So that's, like I said, that's an absolute number. And there are plenty of studies to show that, you know, people who have not, who cut back their protein, their daily overall protein intake while reducing calories, have seen better results than people that just focused on the caloric deficit. So
sure.
Just a side note.
Yeah. And that's where it's very helpful to use an expert to help guide you through this process, even if it's just a 1-hour consultation to give you some, you know, some guidelines and, you know, a couple of rules of thumb to work with. You don't want to dive into this, especially if you're trying to lose a significant amount of weight, in which case, you know, and during the season, in which case there, you know, there could be problematic setbacks with that. Yeah, definitely recommend working with an expert. Like we're giving some advice here on how to help pair that with your training. But as far as some of the more specifics and what that weight loss or body composition management should look like, definitely work with an expert on that. Sweet. Anything else to add?
I think that's it.
All right. We'll wrap it there this week. Cool. That was good.
Cool.
Now I'm going to go do some research on this Morocco stage race.
It looks cool. Yeah.
It does look cool. All right. Thanks, guys. We'll see ya.
See ya.
See ya.
All right, folks, thanks for tuning in for the latest episode of the Matchbox Podcast. Like I said at the beginning, you can send any questions or topic suggestions to matchboxpod@gmail.com with email titled The Matchbox Podcast. Links to each of our social media pages can be found in the show notes. Tune in next week for another endurance training-related discussion and learn more about how you can find that extra match for your next big event. Catch y'all soon. Let's go!
Feel undertrained, overtrained, burnt out, or just plain unmotivated to complete workouts? We understand, and we want to help. Cookie cutter training plans just don't get the job done like a real life coach. A training plan can't adjust when things go sideways, and a training plan doesn't hold you accountable when you slack off. A training plan can't motivate you before a big race. Only a coach can do these things. Get the most out of yourself with coaching that works. Sign up for a free consultation with an Ignition coach today, and let's get to work.